Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Contending for Truth Radio. This is Dan Wilson's Saturday Symposium with Scott Osborne. But first, as always, Red Skelton, tell us a little bit.
I remember a teacher that I had. Now, I went through the seventh grade. I went to the seventh grade. I left home when I was 10 years old because I was hungry. I work in the summer and I go to school in the winter. But I had this one teacher. He was the principal of the Harrison School in Vincennes, Indiana. To me, this was the greatest teacher, a real sage of my time, anyhow. He had such wisdom. And we were all reciting the Pledge of Allegiance one day. And he walked over, this little old teacher, Mr. Lasswell was his name. Mr. Lasswell, he says, I've been listening to you boys and girls recite the Pledge of Allegiance all semester. And it seems as though it's becoming monotonous to you. If I may... May I recite it and try to explain to you the meaning of each word? I, me, an individual, a committee of one, pledge, dedicate all of my worldly goods to give without self-pity, allegiance, my love and my devotion to the flag, our standard, O glory, a symbol of freedom. Wherever she waves, there's respect, because your loyalty has given her a dignity that shouts, freedom is everybody's job. United, that means that we have all come together. States, individual communities that have united into 48 great states. 48 individual communities with pride and dignity and purpose. All divided with imaginary boundaries, yet united to a common purpose. And that's love for country. And to the Republic. Republic. A state in which sovereign power is invested in representatives chosen by the people to govern. And government is the people. And it's from the people to the leaders, not from the leaders to the people, for which it stands. One nation, meaning so blessed by God, indivisible, incapable of being divided, with liberty, which is freedom, the right of power to live one's own life, without threats, fear, or some sort of retaliation. And justice, the principle or qualities of dealing fairly with others. For all. For all. Which means, boys and girls, it's as much your country as it is mine. And now, boys and girls, let me hear you recite the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Since I was a small boy, two states have been added to our country and two words have been added to the Pledge of Allegiance. Under God. Wouldn't it be a pity if someone said that is a prayer and that would be eliminated from schools too?
From the people to the leaders, not the leaders to the people. Dan, I'm putting on my cowboy hat. Because let me tell you, I got child Barack Obama, come and take it. I got my cowboy hat, I got my little Texas flag, I got my Sid Miller stickers on. I'm loving every minute of Texas because let me tell you, I know every day the President of the United States wakes up and he sure wishes Texas wasn't even here. He doesn't like Texas. He doesn't like what we stand for. He doesn't like the fact that the grassroots are involved here in Texas. He doesn't like the fact that conservatives are in Texas. He doesn't like the fact that we still stand up for God and guns and family here in Texas. But that's okay, because he's at the lowest point in the polls that he's ever been this week. It's getting worse, and it's getting worse, and the people are starting to wake up. They're starting to see. He's losing with the women. He's losing the press. Chris Matthews again this week jumped all over him and said, how many beheadings do we have before you take action? 60? When is enough? When are you going to get a plan? You know, Dan, one of the big things to me, is, you know, we can argue back and forth on issues, on philosophy, on ideology all day long, but there are some basics, some basic understandings of human nature that are bipartisan that I don't understand. When you have a leader and he stands firm, takes a firm, strong action, has a firm stand, he has a plan, he's the kind of leader that we look up to, and you've seen some through history, I've seen some through history, different generals that we've had, different military leaders, different presidents that we've had, or even a head of a major company. You know, you look at somebody that we both love and adore, Herman Cain. As a leader, when he stands up and he stands firm, or a parent even in the home, they stand up and they stand firm, you generally have peace. If you stand squishy, if you cannot make a decision, if you look like you're afraid, if you look like you don't know what you're doing, you have chaos. And it doesn't matter if you're the president of the United States. It doesn't matter if you're a governor of a state. It doesn't matter if you're a military commander. It doesn't matter if you're a parent. It doesn't matter if you're the manager of an office where you've got employees that you're in charge of. The concept is always the same. And it's not a Republican concept. It's not a Democratic concept. It is a bipartisan concept. It is just flat-out common sense. And this president has turned the world from being a relatively safe place, for the most part, throughout history, always dangerous places around the world, but for the most part, a lot of things were being held, a lot of things being pushed back, to really a dangerous place. We've got ISIS crossing the border. We've had ISIS sighted in Jason's Deli down in Houston. These guys that are willing to behead people, they're willing to rape little girls, they're willing to do all kinds of abominable things. As like you and I were talking about, they make Hitler's Nazis look like pansies, basically, in their methodology. And we're sitting right now in a world where our borders are being flooded, and he refuses to do anything about it. In fact, we come to find out that he's been arming the enemy instead of standing up for those that are on our side. It is absolutely chaos, and it is 100% Barack Obama's fault as the leader of the free world because of the stance that he has taken. Not because of his position on abortion, not because of his position on Second Amendment, not because he believes that we should nationalize our schools, not because of a lot of these issues that we differ on in opinion on which is the right way to go about handling things, not because he believes that the federal government should take care of everybody's health care, not because of that, but because when it comes to leadership skills, he is an inept leader. And we've got ourselves into a mess. I think the Democratic Party's got themselves into a mess. We are starting to see, as the campaigns head towards November, for the congressional campaigns, for the senatorial campaigns, and even some of the local elections. You've got Democrats all over the country running as far away as they can from Barack Obama. You've actually got some Democrats down there, a couple of them that I know of. I don't quite know the names. I've got friends that are supporting them down there. That the Democrats are more conservative than the Republicans, and that the Democrats are running as far away as they can from some of these issues. It's absolutely gone to a point, Dan, I never imagined we'd be here right now in September of 2014 at our place in history. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I mean, look at even Pelosi, Feinstein, and Boxer have all turned their backs on them. And I thought I'd never see that day. I mean, everybody is saying, get away from me, because this guy is a maroon. I mean, look what he's doing in the Ukraine. I mean, we promised in 93, after the fall of the Berlin Wall, that if Russia tried to invade the Ukraine, we would be there supplying them with whatever they needed to protect their nation. What do? We send them some MREs. I mean, this is how much of an idiot this guy is. And he doesn't even understand from a strategic point of view, the Ukraine is a major place that we need to have on our side. I mean, because it's a gateway to Russia and it's a gateway to Europe. And he doesn't even realize it. I mean, this is, if we could go back to 1918, this is an exact repeat of what President Wilson did in 1918. He demilitarized the U.S., he turned around, and over the next decade, you know, we had the Roaring Twenties, and then the Great Market Crash, and had the government stayed out of the economy, it would have taken less than a year to recover, but FDR stuck his hand into it just like Obama and messed everything up. The only thing we're missing is the Dust Bowl. And now, because the United States refused to stand up and take its rightful place as leaders of the free world, Germany started laying claim to Czechoslovakia, Austria. Then they invaded Poland. And then after that, France. And then they went after England. And while we sat there looking at them going, huh, you shouldn't do that. You know, and all the time, any person with half a brain who was watching that back then knew that this was leading us right into a world war. And had we stepped in earlier when Hitler just started doing his, basically as soon as he hit Poland, had we come in then, we could have stopped him dead in his tracks before we could have gotten anything going. And look what happened. We waited until it was almost too late, and we almost lost World War II. And now we're doing the exact same thing. I mean, from 1918 to 1941, it's basically a repeat from what we did from 1998 to present. And it's like, You know, why can't people learn from history? There's a saying that goes, if you want to see what's coming in the future, just take a look at the past. And this is identical to what happened back then. I mean, the reasons for the Great Depression and the reasons for our depression now are a bit different. But basically, it's all the same. And it, part of, except for this one, this administration is the most corrupt administration in history. I mean, I have never seen an administration that is so corrupt. Between Holder and Obama, it's embarrassing. I mean, I'm actually embarrassed that this guy is our president. And how he made a second election, I have no idea. And now they're talking about, on the Republican side, they're trying to get Romney to run again. It's like even the Republicans have gotten to the point where they're useless. I mean, if they had another brain, it'd be lonely. You know, it's like, yeah, we lost miserably last time, so why don't we use the same guy and we can do it again? And, the Republican Party is, the elites or whatever you want to call them, are fighting us conservatives. I mean, what is wrong? You know, what's wrong with Reagan's, 11th commandment? And these fools are going out. Next thing you know, we're going to have Bob Dole back. I mean, it's like this.
Please, no. No.
It wouldn't surprise me now, I'm telling you. I mean, it's just everything's gone crazy. And all I can say is we just got to keep our head to the grindstone and win this ourselves, because if we don't end up getting the majority of the conservatives running as our primary candidate, we're in a heap of trouble. You know, it's and back to you.
Well, that is for sure. And we need to get one. And I've been rooting for Jeb Bush. I hope the establishment picks Jeb Bush because I think we can beat him. I think that if we look at the last primary, for a lot of reasons, I think Jeb Bush is the one and I don't think the Democrats are going to pick him the Republicans are going to pick him as an establishment pick because I think they know this better than I do. But Jeb Bush has got some huge problems, and I'm hoping they pick him, because I really think if we don't have somebody like a Mitt Romney that's got just enough popularity to keep them floating at 40% all the way through a primary, I believe that a conservative can pop out, whether it be an Alan West. And I'll tell you, I love Ted Cruz. He is my favorite senator. I love him. He's my senator. I've always felt that I would prefer somebody with executive experience run for president, start off with.
Number two, I think we need him in the Senate. I get really kind of mad sometimes. We get these guys that are great in the Senate, and then we want to run them for something else. Let him do some work in the Senate. Let him get some experience. Right now, I'm a firm believer that we need, in the world condition for foreign policy, we need somebody like an Alan West, who is willing to stand up, say it the way it is, like Ted Cruz does, but has that experience. I believe a Ted Cruz, an Alan West, I believe a Scott Walker, can absolutely crush an establishment squishy opponent like Mitt Romney or Jeb Bush, if we get the right one in there. If we get somebody in there, if the establishment gets somebody in there like Mitt Romney that can hold out against all the conservatives, and then they split the vote up and they have that fight like we did last time, we're going to end up in a mess again. And I believe if we end up with a Mitt Romney where you don't really have a big difference between what we've got right now and what we're trying to offer, I don't believe we can take it back. I believe if we've got a Newt Gingrich or an Alan West or somebody who is able to stand up and say, this is why we're conservative again. You know, Dan, that's what made Ronald Reagan so great. Ronald Reagan had something special. And Ronald Reagan was able to explain to the American people why big government doesn't work. He could stand up there and say, listen, it makes a mess when the federal government is too big. It makes a mess when the federal government has got too much. We need to put that power back in the states because it's closer to you, the people. And you, the people, have got more control. And I believe we need somebody like that. Mitt Romney, as a man, I love him to death. I think he's a fine man, a fine gentleman, a great businessman, a successful businessman. But he was not willing to take the fight. You know, that one debate where Candy Crowley stepped in there. Can you imagine, Dan, if that had been Newt Gingrich? Newt Gingrich would have been, hold the phone. No, wait a minute. What do you mean, Candy, read it? What do you know that Candy's already got? We're not continuing this debate until we get this straightened out. You just cheated.
Exactly.
And if that had happened in that debate, we would have won. Mitt Romney would have won if he had stood up and said, no, wait a minute, that is not cool. Let's really look at the facts here. Let's look at what's going on Benghazi. And we just need somebody. And I'm a firm believer, Dan, that the person doesn't have to necessarily be as conservative as sometimes we want if they'll just put the fight. If they'll just stand up and say what's right. Ronald Reagan himself had some issues with Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan wasn't a far-right conservative. He was more of a moderate in some of his thoughts. He was a good man, though, that was willing to stand up and fight. And I think we can do it. And I'll tell you another reason, Dan, why I think this is going to be an interesting primary season. After we get, of course, past November. November 7th is, or whatever it is, first Tuesday in November is going to be the election. The first Wednesday in November, or maybe that'll be the second Wednesday of November, they'll start talking about the presidential election. They always do. There's another big difference this time, and that's that the conservatives are a whole lot more organized. We really, during the presidential primary, where we were supporting Herman Cain and Newt Gingrich and Michelle Bachmann was running and Rick Perry and all these people, we were still playing some catch-up on the social networking, on organization, but we've come a long, long ways since then. And we can see that in some of these wins and almost wins that have taken place. And I'm going to start with down there near you, Michael Dreykorn. Michael Dreykorn,
oh, yeah.
With almost no money next to the establishment, went up against not only an establishment incumbent, but your Senate Majority Leader down there. Or state, was she, you know, I take the, yeah, was he, he was, see, he was running for Senate, against your Senate Majority Leader down there. Up 40%. Now, that's a win in my book. Now, did he take the election? Did he win the election? No, he didn't win the election. But he made a huge uphill battle dent. He almost climbed to the top of the hill. And
oh, yeah.
If he'd had a little bit of team, we've seen it happen. And let's go to Eric Cantor. They did have the team right. They did build a big enough team. They were able to take and build a big enough team. Look at Chris McDaniel. They won that election. Thad Cochran cheated. He had to go out and get Democratic votes in order to hold that seat. So he lost. They won. They did the right thing. And we've got quite a few races over the country that were like that. Now, I participated heavily. I was the social media director for Zach Poskovich up in Tennessee running against Bob Corker. And we had the same type of thing. We had the same uphill battle. But that was 2 years ago.
Right.
And let me tell you, folks, it was a huge uphill battle. And we didn't get as far as some of these other people have gotten. Now, Zach came out on top of the four people that were primarying against Bob Corker. We did a great job. We won the race of the attackers, and Bob Corker did lose a significant amount and had to spend a significant amount. He hadn't spent money on a primary election in years, and he had to spend $6 million. But we've come a long ways, and this year's primaries have proven it. And I think it's going to be a different story when it comes to the primary election that we get to that's going to basically start this next November in some ways. And I'm a firm believer that you're going to see a whole lot more of people winning instead of this spiky thing that went on. Because before, Team Gingrich, they were getting there, but they weren't strong. Now nobody had a team like Ron Paul and Herman Cain. We know that. Herman Cain came from the bottom. He was the candidate that they said would go nowhere. And his grassroots team took him to the top. Some of the rest of them did not understand team building, but still did a pretty good job. They had their supporters behind them. But I really, really think this go around, we go in with a whole lot more experience. You and I and Jennifer and some of our friends, Melissa Bohannon, when we did the Cain train, when we were on Team Cain, we really didn't know what we were doing at all. I just sat down one day and went, well, you know, they're doing these Post-its all over the gas stations. The liberals like to use them, and the conservatives like to use this Post-it idea, and you write a little note on a Post-it and stick it somewhere so somebody else sees it. And I got to thinking, well, you know, that would work with a business card. So I created the Herman Cain business card group in Team Cain, and pretty soon that was the number two group out of all the about 400 groups that we had. And we had 1,000 people running all over the country printing out these business cards and leaving a trail of them everywhere, including wrapped up in the toilet paper rolls, so the next person that comes in and pulls the toilet paper down out drops the Herman Cain business card. That was one of my favorite places to put. But basically, Dan, we didn't really know what we were doing. We were learning on the fly. Well, since then, I've worked on the Dan Hughes campaign and the Zach Poskovich campaign and the Don Chamberlain campaign and Sid Miller and all these different campaigns. I'm a whole lot smarter now than I was before. When I decide to pick a presidential candidate and I decide to step in on his team and try and help, I'm a whole lot further. I've learned Blog Talk Radio. I've learned Facebook. I've learned Twitter, even though I'm mad at Twitter right now. I've learned Twitter. I've learned social media. I've learned a lot about campaigning, and I've learned about what it takes to be a campaign manager and a social and a media advisor and all these different parts that I had no clue. And many of us had no clue. If we had the experience, all of us now, that we've got now, when we started on the Herman Cain campaign, I don't think he could have been beatable. I think he would have risen to the top quicker, and I think he would have won that campaign just on our experience that we've got right now. And I think that's going to make a big difference for the conservatives because, and here's a basic concept for you folks. If you helped on one of the campaigns, maybe you were a Santorum guy or a Bachman guy or a Perry guy or a Herman Cain guy, do you ever remember running into the Mitt people? We never ran into the Mitt people. Mitt Romney didn't have a team. He had his supporters, yes, and he had his group of people across the country that were supporting him. But we never ran into them on social media. They just weren't there. So when he won the primary, basically there were some from each one of the campaigns that came in and got politically active. But he didn't have a team. And there's a reason for that. And it's the same on the Democratic side. Your activists are not in the middle. Your activists are in the core of your party. The left doesn't have any activists that are John F. Kennedy Democrats. They don't have any. You know, Danny, you, and I thought about this a few weeks back when we had mentioned, you and I both have said that we think that there should be a team like Frederick Douglass Republicans, John F. Kennedy Democrats. The only problem with that is there's no activists in the middle of the Democratic Party. They're all on the far left. And it is the same with the Republican Party. The conservatives are where all the activists are, the people that are willing to get up and put out yard signs, the people that are willing to get out and knock doors for a candidate, the people that are willing to make phone calls for a candidate, the people that are willing to share on social media, the people that are willing to talk about their candidate. They are the conservatives. So you get somebody like in the primary, like a Jeb Bush or a Mitt Romney this time, the conservative base is stronger than it was in the last primary in the area of networking, in the area of working, in the area of grassroots. And I really think if we did a replay right now of that same primary, I don't think Mitt Romney would have won. I think somebody else could have pulled it off. Who it was, I don't know. I don't think it could have been Rex Santorum, and I don't think it could have been Michelle Bachman. But I do believe Rick Perry, had he stayed in the race, actually, if Rick Perry hadn't dropped out when he did, he was going to be fine. He really blew it by backing out. But a Newt Gingrich or a Herman Cain, somebody solid, somebody that can message. I'm a firm believer if we went through that all again because of the experience that the grassroots base has now that they didn't have before, I think he would have won. What do you think, Dan?
Oh, yeah, we had some really, really solid candidates back then during the last presidential election. And, you know, as you said, we had Herman Cain. You know, we had Gingrich. I mean, we had Perry. We had so many really solid people that could have taken on anybody. And our only problem was, as you said, we were just trying to figure out what the heck to do. I mean, we really didn't have a clue. We were just kind of winging it the entire way. But now, you know, we've been there, done that, and now we're, I wouldn't call us seasoned veterans because we're learning all the time, but we're proving money doesn't mean anything. It's how you're going to deliver the message, and we are getting better and better and better at that with people like Kay Carl, you know, with Wayne Dupree and you and Dan Butcher, and you know, we have a real solid core that all of us who were on the Cain train and started just before, we're becoming a kind of like the new forefathers. And through us and through our words, we're gathering more and more people following us who can be the workers and getting out there and spreading the word. I mean, look how many people are now turning to this form of media to get the news. I mean, we're catching up rapidly with the lamestream media, and we're going to overtake them. I mean, it's just a question of time. I mean, people go to conservative radio, they listen to people like Glenn Beck and, you know, Mark Levin and Andrew Wilkow and, you know, all the rest. It's, they're listening to these people, and now we're getting the word out much more effectively than we did four years ago, or what is it, 2.5 years ago. And it's getting better all the time. And now we have 4 years to make what we could actually be ahead of the lamestream media and be in a leadership position in this type of delivery. And all we need is a candidate to stand behind. And if we have a Herman Cain or a, you know, a Newt Gingrich or, you know, anybody who can deliver the message and who has the ability to stand up and say, this is, you know, you cross this line, you're going to hate it. And take no crap from anybody. I mean, if I was president and Putin said what he said to Obama, I would say, it's on, dog. And I'd have a few divisions over there overnight, and I'd be supplying the checks with, I mean, the Ukrainians with everything they needed, and inside of 3 days, ISIS would be, I mean, Russians would be pushed right back to the line. And then I'd establish a few bases and say, do it again, jerk. They'll kick your butt. And we're, you know, and the same thing with the Middle East. I wouldn't put up with this, with Hamas. I wouldn't put up with Iran. You know, I turn around and say, Iran, you know, do you want your butt kicked? And I tried diplomatic means, but if they didn't, you know, if they didn't straighten out, I'd take out every nuclear program they have. You know, just send a bunch of Tomahawks over. Don't even have to cross the line. I'd make sure we'd be standing right beside the Israelis and would hunt down Hamas one by one. Until we got rid of the whole damn lot. And then I tell the Palestinians, you know, you pull this crap off again, you're going to be a used-to-be country. This has been going on way too long, and it's time to, you know, stop this BS. And our borders, I mean, personally, I don't think a single fence is enough. I want a fence right along the border, 15-foot fence. Then I want another 15, about 20-foot spread with all sorts of sensors in between. Have another fence that's electric, and then have a third fence and make it a three-fence system. And I would also have, you know, sensors that all along so I could tell if there was any type of digging. and our borders would be closed tighter than a bull's butt. You know, this is just common sense thing. And as for, you know, our that soldier they're holding, I'd go to the president of Mexico. I said, you got 24 hours. You deliver him, or we're coming in and we're going to get him. And you aren't going to like the way we're going to do it. Because you need us. We don't need you. Now, stop being jerks and give our soldier back. Or there's going to be hell to pay. And, you know, standing up and for what's right, nobody's going to argue with you in the world. You know, if somebody beheaded anybody, I mean, any other country, there'd be hell to pay. Obama looks there and he sucks his thumb. You know, give the 5 minutes, Ray Ray's speech, and then he's out on the golf course again. You know, this is not the way to run a frigging country. I have never seen somebody as bad and as corrupt as this guy is. I mean, there's a high probability the guy doesn't even belong in office. And once he leaves office, personally, I hope they go after him. And I hope he ends up in jail, along with Holder, Biden, and Clinton. You know, everybody seems to mention Benghazi. But what about Extortion 17? 22 Navy SEALs, SEAL Team 6, murdered. By who? Hillary and good old Barack with some help from Biden. This is not, this is beyond an embarrassment. Now they're picking me off. And now they're putting our country in jeopardy by refusing to shut the borders down. And they're calling ISIS, you know, the junior, JV, the junior varsity. No, ISIS is a strong, organized group who is looking just for statehood, that is looking for who to take over so they can build more and more power so they can go after Israel and us and England. And if we allow that to happen, we allow them to take over Iraq, we're in deep trouble. And this is what this fool does not understand. Instead of giving pink slips to our soldiers in battle, they should be getting recruiting like mad and getting as many people in as possible. Because we're going to, I mean, if they take over Iraq, we're going to see World War III within inside of before the next presidential election, and sadly, it'll start on our land in England. So it's going to be 10 times more difficult to fight the war, and we're going to see this is going to be so much more bloody than World War II ever was. You know, we're going to see millions of our own citizens killed because of this stupid jerk in Washington. And all of them should be tried for treason. I think I've complained enough.
Well, Dan, and you're right. And I'll tell you, General McInerney and General Vallely this week basically said it's coming to a constitutional crisis where the military might just have to remove him. Because he's not, you know, we talked about him being weak. That's just one side of it. The other side of it is he is actively supporting our enemies. We've gotten to that point where, you know, that's what Benghazi was all about. They were selling guns to these people that have become ISIS. He has absolutely done enough that in any other time frame of our history's country, they would have not only impeached him but tried him for treason. But the news media that most people follow is just not doing their job and not explaining some of these things that are actually going on. But it might get to a point where our elected sheriffs, our military, might have to stand up and do what Congress isn't doing. And I'm a firm believer that with NSA and with what's going on, the White House and the Democrats must have a lot of goop on some of our elected politicians, which is really, really a sad state of affairs. But we're just seeing a lot of politicians that at this point should be active doing something, and they're just kind of acting like no big deal, like they're afraid, like they're afraid of a major uprising or something if they go after this president. And I believe if you got the word out to exactly what's really going on to some of the rest of the country, the overwhelming support to get rid of him would be huge. He's already sitting down lower in most polls than George Bush ever sat. He doesn't have the support of the people. He's lost the support of his own, the black community, if we can say that. He's lost the support of the women, base of the women. It's just really an interesting situation. And we still got Joe Arpaio with still information that he's waiting on. Not quite sure when he's going to come out with that or what the news media is even going to do with it when they do. There are so many things. There's a scandal a day. There's Fast and Furious. There's Benghazi. And we start there, and we can just keep going. We'd rattle on for the rest of the show. We'd run out of time and have to go into archive time if we started talking about all the scandals and listing them out. But when you've got decorated generals like McInerney and Vallely, who are saying that it might be up to the military to just put a stop to this, which I would hate to see that have to happen. You know, we've always been known for our peaceful situations when we change our governments. But we've just gotten ourselves into a situation, and it's not all Barack Obama's fault. He's causing a lot of this. However, I put a huge chunk of blame on the American people for not paying attention. They've got their heads in the sand. They don't pay attention to what's going on. We've turned into a very lazy society. This is something that I deal with on a daily basis with my nieces, raising three children in a society where we've got everything. We've got everything so good. Our life is so easy. Nobody has to work hard. 100 years ago, these kids would have never made it. If they had had, in order to have their breakfast, go out to the barn and pick up the eggs, and they had to cook, they had to bake their own loaf of bread the night before, and they had to go out and milk the cow to get the milk it just shows up for these kids. Mom comes home with a bunch of bags of groceries. They have to sometimes help get them out of the car. They complain when we do that. Then they have to put the groceries away. They complain when they do that. They don't have any clue of how good they've actually got it. And we as a society are suffering from that, that we've got it so good. You know, and I'm the same way. I'm preaching to myself as well. I love my coffee. I really love my coffee. As I've gotten older and the Alka-Seltzer days have appeared and the baking soda days have appeared, I've cut down on my coffee a lot this last year, but I love my coffee. I'll make a pot of coffee and it'll go for the day, and then the next morning I want some coffee. Instead of making a pot, I'll take what's left and put it in the microwave. And what do? I don't even take and put 1 minute on. I push the 30-second button twice. And then what do I do? I stand there waiting. Oh my goodness, that minute just to let my coffee heat up. When there was a time we had to grind the beans, I had to take and put the kettle on, put the fire. You had to start the fire in the stove, in the wood stove to cook your coffee, and it took 10 or 15 minutes to get your coffee there. It's so easy today. Even if I make a fresh pot, within about 3 minutes, I've got coffee to drink. I got to go to all the trouble of filling up the reservoir and putting it in and putting the coffee in the filter, get the filter out. You know, that takes a little bit of time. But we basically have gotten to a place in our society where everything is so easy, and we've removed a bunch of our hurdles. One of those hurdles we've removed is good old-fashioned hard work. And it's made us a weaker society. So I really try, and I push the girls. I don't do anything around here anymore, Dan. You know, there was a day when I used to do all the laundry for them. I used to do all the dishwashing for them. I used to do a huge portion of the cooking for them. I cleaned up their rooms. I cleaned up behind them. In fact, even to the point, you know, of cleaning up their own poop, doing diapers. They've gotten to an age now where they can make up for all that work. So I really don't. I go up behind them and help them straighten things up a little bit. But for the most part, I make them do all the chores in this house. And I don't do that because I'm lazy. I do that because I want them, by the time they become adults, to be used to at least a decorum of hard work, so that they understand when they get their own families that it's a lot of hard work. They don't even have a clue as to how hard their mom works, getting up and leaving the house at 7 in the morning, and she comes home at 6:15, 6:30 at night. She's gone almost 12 hours out of her day. And they really don't have, and part of it's because they're kids, they don't have a comprehension of exactly how hard she actually works. And I don't want them to get out of the house, get done with college, and not understand it takes hard work to make some money. Especially since by the time they graduate from college, if they're able to do that, we might be living in some pretty dire circumstances. We might be living in a situation where all they have to eat is rice and beans and bread. We've seen many, many countries that even right now in this world, they don't have all the wonderful things we've got. You know how I am, Dan. Count your many blessings. Stand in here in the kitchen and open up the refrigerator and look at all the great things we got. We got eggs and milk and we got Kraft macaroni and cheese. Or no, it's not Kraft. It's the kind that you put in the oven and bake, Sidena's favorite. We got these chocolate chip cookie things. They come in packets, you know, Dan. You open up the packet and you break the dough apart and lay it down on the thing. We didn't even have that when we were kids. You know, Dan, I think when I was in high school, they started having the round things of dough that you could cut your cookies out of. But when I was a little kid, if you wanted chocolate chip cookies, you had to get the flour out. And, you know, we got ketchup and we got fruit and all kinds of things. We got some more condiments than anybody could imagine. One of my favorites, California French dressing. And we go through mustard. We go through a thing of mustard about a week. We've got all these wonderful things, and we open up the freezer, and there's all kinds of steaks and meat, and we got frozen crinkle-cut fries. Remember, Dan, there was a time when you couldn't buy frozen fries. If you wanted to make fries at home, you had to cut the potatoes up and deep-fry them. We've just got so many blessings, and we might not have that. If Barack Obama has his way and continues to lower the standard of living in this nation because he believes it's unfair that we've got what we've got and the rest of the world doesn't have what we've got, we might get to the point where what you've got is barely a little thing. And that might be their lives. When they're feeding their kids, it might be a very, very big struggle just to get rice and some bread and maybe a little bit of meat on the table. They might not have all these luxuries that they've got right now. And I worry about that because I know that the far left, that's where they want to take us. They really want to take us there. They don't want these kids to have their own cars when they grow up. They don't want that. They want them to take public transportation because they believe cars are evil and they're polluting the world and bringing on global warming. And we see, we see the left lobbying all the time to make it harder and harder to own a car. They might get to the point where Sedetta, when she's 19, 20 years old, where you and I had a car to drive around, might not be able to afford one. She might have to take the bus everywhere she goes. She might have to get up in the morning and take the bus to work instead of driving like her mom drives. A car might be out of reach for most people by then. That's the where the left wants to take us. And, you know, Dan, we talked about this Thursday on Rodney Lee Conover. We talked about this a little bit. The goals of the left and what they actually want. These are the things that they want. They want abortion on demand. They want the government to be able to decide whether you have a child or not. Because they believe the world has become too populated, and they believe that human beings are destroying the world. And they wanted to get it to a point where when my niece is old enough to have children, where the government can decide whether or not you have that child or not, and how many children you have. We've seen this happen in history right now in China. If you have a girl, you're not allowed to have it. They take it away. They kill it. And that's in the modern world today. And we know that the left, that's where they want to go. And you know, Dan, these are the things that we're fighting for. We're not just fighting for Common Core. We know what danger it is. Bill Nye, the science guy, let the cat out of the bag. I don't know if you got to see that one yet or not, Dan. But Bill Nye, the science guy, says, yay for Common Core. Maybe we can finally stop the spread of Christianity. Maybe we can stop people from talking about their faith. Maybe we can break this cycle of religion. And that's one of the goals of Common Core. They want to get a hold of the minds of our kids and stop our kids from becoming religious. They want to be able to teach on a nationwide basis that your mom and dad and the religion they're teaching, they're full of crap. And that's their goal. There's a lot of goals behind Common Core. They want to be able to get into the home and tell parents what to do and how to live. We're already seeing that. Basically, you know, many places, school, if you send your child to school with what they don't deem as a good lunch, you just can't do that as a parent. And they're trying to do that. And I really worry, Dan, in 20 years, when Sedetta's in her 30s, what kind of life she's going to have, what kind of lifestyle she's going to have. Are there going to be jobs? Are we going to be like the 30s, where many people are just, they just don't have it, and people are homeless, and they don't have it. If you can't find a job and you can't support yourself, how do you have a roof over your head, let alone some of the finer things in life? I just believe we're heading in that direction. We're being pulled in that direction, and, Dan, we got to wake the people up. We got to wake them up. Mm-hmm. And there, Bob, there's my rant. I'll pass it back to you to rant a little while.
Well, I agree with you. And if you read my post recently, it's been proving how God is the center of our country and has been since the very beginning. And it's a select few on the left that have removed him as the center of our country. And I proved it by just quoting some of our forefathers. I quoted Benjamin Franklin's prayer address at the beginning of the Constitutional Convention in 1787. And I quoted his closing address to Congress on September 19th, 1787, on the closing day of the Constitutional Convention, right before the members signed it. And both times he mentioned God, and how it was God who put this document together. He said, no, it's not perfect, but you know something? Every other country in the world is going to look and say, my God, look at what they came up with. And that's what they did. We created a document that is equal to that of the Bible. Why? Because it was divinely created. And anybody who wants to argue that can bring it on. All you have to do is take a trip to Washington. God is carved into every one of the original buildings. His name is carved in stone. That's a fact. Go into our Capitol Rotunda and turn your head up to the top, to the ceiling. What do you see George Washington ascending into heaven? This is what our forefathers felt. Separation from church and state doesn't mean removal of God. It says removal of religions from our government, not God. And see, people somehow or another can't seem to differentiate a religion from God. And it's like all they were saying is we don't want a Catholic ruling or an Episcopalian or Protestant or Baptist or whatever ruling and forcing us to practice our religion, our belief in God, the way they want to do it. That's all it was saying. And this group on the far left has taken some things that were said in our past and have twisted it around so much to fit their needs. The Supreme Court has broken the constitutional laws more times than Carter has liver pills. And we're allowing this to happen. And yes, I blame the people as well. You know, I hear Republicans complaining about their reps. I look at them and say, well, you voted for them. You know, I was supporting so-and-so. And I was I haven't made a vote that I've been happy about since Ronald Reagan. I mean, where I can truly say I'm voting for a person I really believe in. It's been that long. And it's sad. I mean, Bush 1 wasn't bad. You know, I could handle him. Wasn't jumping up and down for Bush 2. But, he was better than the alternative. And it's going on and on with, choices that are getting worse and worse. Our representatives are becoming more corrupt by the hour, not even by the day. They can't get that far. I mean, it's... And people are sitting around, like sheep. They just, they turn on the TV and whatever pops up on NBC or CBS or ABC or whatever, and they go, yep. And they believe in it. Do they bother picking getting online? I mean, we have it so easy today. All you have to do is say, well, this guy, he was a congressman, and, what's his voting record? And it's right there in front of you. It's clicking a few buttons. And, the answer's right there for you. They can't even be bothered to do that. They can't even be bothered to drive the mile and a half down the road to go to a town hall meeting, go to a school board meeting. You know, they think the government, they say, well, it's only one vote. And, you know, our country has 260 billion people in it, and nobody's going to miss my vote. Well, they should have lived in Florida, you know, a few elections ago, when they were counting it down and the votes came down within the hundreds. And your vote doesn't matter? Yes, it does. Every vote counts. And it's not a option for you to vote. It's an obligation. You owe it to every soldier who is laying in cemeteries on lands that are thousands of miles away, who are laying in Normandy, in Luxembourg, in France. You owe it to these people. You owe it to the soldiers that were never found in Iwo Jima, Guadalcanal, the Java Sea. You owe it to those who died during the Bataan Death March or the Civil War. The 50,000 that were killed in Gettysburg. The 45,000 that were killed in Korea. The 58,000 who died in Vietnam. All to defend your freedom. And, excuse me, we owe it to these people to honor these individuals. And how can we do that? By taking up our Constitution obligation and taking it seriously. Do a little research. Go to a town hall meeting. Don't just vote for a guy because he's a Republican or a Democrat or an independent or a whatever. I mean, excuse me again. Vote for who is best for the job. Look into their backgrounds. If the guy's a crook, don't vote for him. We got enough crooks. You know, I don't know about you guys, but, you know, when I was working, I worked damn hard for my money. I don't want to give my money to these jerks so they can drive around in a Bentley, so they can get $800,000 pension when they retire. What kind of crap is that? And this is a reality we're dealing with today. Why? Because we were too lazy to do our constitutional duty. We can't point our fingers at anybody else but ourselves. Our forefathers gave us the ability to make sure that we, the people, could run this government. And we handed it away. We gave it right to the government. We gave that right away. And if we don't get it back soon, it'll be too late and there'll be no a point of no return. And it's coming up, folks. It's coming up a lot sooner than you realize. Just ask the people in Cuba.
That's for sure.
You know, one day they were living in a free society, the next day it was all gone.
Sound of Music.
And Sound of Music, Austria, same thing. And, we could go on and on and on. How many societies? Korea, South Vietnam. There's so many places where everything was lost.
California.
New York.
Well, when we talk about New York, though, Dan, we really should separate. Because there's a big chasm between Manhattan Island and the rest of New York. There's like a lot of good people in upstate New York.
Well, I have my relatives. I'm the only New Englander. Everybody else is from Albany area. Albany, New York, Schenectady, Troy, upstate, near the Adirondacks. And those people, you want to talk about conservative. Not only are they conservative, but they're really good people. And it's only, basically, you go south of the Catskills, and then there's the Tappan Zee Bridge. From the Tappan Zee Bridge down to New York City, you can cut it off and throw it away. At least as far as I'm concerned. Tappan Zee North, great.
That's right.
It's a beautiful area, and it's a shame that the city ruined such a beautiful state. It truly is, this is what people have to wake up and see.
Well, Dan, here's the thing that I don't understand. The reason why Manhattan Island, New York City, the reason why it is so developed, and it really is a wonderful place. I wouldn't want to live there, but there's some wonderful things there. That's our business capital. There's drives a part of our economy. The reason why it is so, it is the great city that it is because of freedom, liberty, capitalism, entrepreneurship, all of these things that we stand for. That and they've got 5-1 Democrat to Republican there. They got all the far left people living there, enjoying the benefits of our way of doing things, and they want to change it. That's what I don't understand.
Well, the problem, you know what the problem is? The left doesn't have a clue as to how we got everything. They think everything was given to us by some Martian or something that came down. They don't understand that the reason we're here like we are today is through a lot of hard work, a lot of people who gave everything for us to have what we have today. How many hundreds of thousands of people have died so that we could live this life we're living today? And see, the far left doesn't see that. They see us like, oh, you're taking over Vietnam. Well, you know what happened when we left Vietnam? 2 million South Vietnamese were slaughtered. Oh, but they don't want to look at that. This is what these people, these idiots refuse to look at. They refuse to look at the truth. They refuse to understand for every action there's an equal and opposite reaction. And that holds true in something more than physics. it holds true in everything, everyday life. God taught us this. Jesus taught us this. You don't do this. Why? Because it's going to come back at you. You know, through the lessons of the Old Testament and the New Testament, they explained all of this. They've laid it out on the table. All we have to do is listen. I mean, it's not a big deal. I mean, it drives me nuts. You know, and telling the truth, all the major religions that are even non-Judeo-Christian are basically the same. Buddhists, they're, you know, they have the basic same beliefs, as in, you know, help your neighbor and, you know, do not harm and work together as a people. What we're seeing happen here with these crazy nuts in ISIS, even the Muslims have said, hey, wait a minute. We don't want any part of this crap. I mean, Al-Qaeda ran away from them. And see, the left goes, see, this is what happens with religion. This is not religion. They're a bunch of thugs. And, you know, this is what really bothers me, is that, you know, they take something, twist it around, and they, if they can't get you to go to follow them with the truth, they're willing to lie. And this is how Obama has Congress. By the, you know, not saying a word, I'll put dollars to donuts, is that he said, he probably told everybody in Congress, even the ones that are on the up and up, you try to stand up against me, I'll make something up and I'll hang you by your, you know what. He's corrupt enough to do that. He don't care. I mean, they've killed, we know they've killed Tom Clancy. There's a good possibility Andrew Breitbart was killed by them. I mean, nothing is beyond these people. And, you know, this is why we need to wake up and take back our country. Lady Liberty is sitting there crying. You know, I get emotional about this because it's, you know, this isn't the nation I grew up in. It's, you know, it's time to set straight. And I'm hoping we can do it without bloodshed. But it's getting to a point where it's just around the corner. And we're going to see heads rolling in the streets. And I want to see that. You know, I'm to the point now is we're shopping for Barb for a gun. You know, Jennifer's looking for a gun. Why? Because, you know, I don't have faith that somebody's going to come and help me. So I got to arm and protect myself. And nobody's going to take away my Second Amendment rights. I don't care who the heck you are. You know, and this is where it's going. I never believed that we'd be in this position. You told me that in 1980 that we'd be where we are today, I'd say you're on drugs. And now I'm looking here shaking my head and I can't believe it. And praise God, people are starting to finally wake up. Maybe we can start turning things around. And with that, I'll send it back to you, Scott.
Well, and so true. And you know, I've got confidence in this great nation. And there are we talked about a lot of the negatives. There's still a lot of positives. Excuse me. We still have a very strong economy. It's in a depression right now, but as depressed as it is, all you got to do is drive by a Walmart. And people are still spending money. There's a lot of people that are out of jobs. The jobs report says 6.2 or something. That's insane, because there's just a lot of people that aren't included in there that have quit just working, looking for a job. They're just not plentiful. And that's going to get worse as Barack Obama makes this worse. But we've got a strong economy. We still got a high standard of living. And there's still great things about this nation. And I believe the people are waking up. I really do. We see more and more of them waking up and seeing what's going on. We just got to wake up the rest of them. And I don't know what it's going to take. It's going to take something, but I'm not sure what it is. But the American people, when it all comes down to it, I'm drinking my coffee, a cup of coffee I was talking about making. You know, this great country is great, and we've got young people coming up that are so talented. You know, I look at my three nieces, and as much as I worry about them, there's a lot of things that I don't worry about. You know, my niece is smart. All three of them are very, very smart. Some of them don't always use the smartness. I think you and I, Dan, were probably the same way when we were kids. We didn't always use our brains that we had. I think that's just natural coming to kids. But they've got so much potential in so many things. My one niece is here with me, my oldest niece, and you know, when it comes to common sense, she's got a lot of common sense, and she uses it. And she's not afraid to tell her friends at school, hey, listen, I don't talk that way, and different things like that. You know, and I'm proud of that. But we pray, and we continue to do things like this radio show where we continue to try and wake the people up and get them to understand where we're going. And you know, Dan, I've been following and looking at things on Facebook, and I'll tell you, Common Core is really falling apart as we watch it. Victoria Jackson, she's sharing right now. I'm friends with Victoria Jackson. I've never massaged that relationship. We need to get her on a show. I need to just break down and get in chat and ask her. I'm always afraid. She's one of my favorites. So I think I might just break down and do that this afternoon. She's on Facebook a lot. But you never know if it's actually her or if she's hired somebody. But I think she actually uses her own Facebook. But get her on a show. We got so many great patriots and so many things that are fun going on Facebook. But I've noticed over the last few days a lot on Common Core. And the Huffington Post put out, and I just posted it here not too long ago, the Huffington Post posted a great post on Common Core about how the teachers are really starting to realize what it's involved with, because they've had to do it. You know, they followed the Nancy Pelosi thing. Let's pass it so we can find out what's in it. Well, the teachers are finding out what's in it, and they're really starting to speak up. In fact, about 60% of the teachers do not like Common Core, which is incredible when you consider the lopsidedness of Democratic teachers to Republican teachers. You don't have a whole lot of conservative teachers out there. The left has worked really, really hard to make sure that a good portion of the people working in our school system are left. And I'll tell you, Common Core to me is really starting to fall apart at the seams. We got a lot of states that have absolutely just outlawed it, which really messes them up when it all comes down to it. And they've lost the support of the teachers. They've lost the support of the parents. And so I'm hoping as we watch over this next few months that it absolutely just gets sidetracked. We can have some strong people in Congress who could really stand up and really take a bite out of it. But there's some other things that, you know, are just we've got Obamacare, and it seems to be there to stay, which is really, really kind of scary. Our congressmen have had an opportunity to defund it, and they haven't. They seem to absolutely like it because they think that it helps them win elections or something. But Dan, we're running into the last half hour of the show. My niece is handing me something. What are you handing me? She wants me to read this. Can I read this on the air? No. She's passing me. Yeah, I won't read it, but I'll tell you, Sedena is not afraid to stand up against Barack Obama in school. And
good.
She was yelling it in the lunch line, and everybody was telling her, looking at her like she was crazy. But you know, and a lot of the kids even get it. I'll tell you where the kids get it is when they start realizing how that Michelle Obama's messing around with their food. There's been a major revolt all across the country. In fact, last week on Twitter, the junior high and high school kids were on a campaign to tell Michelle Obama, get yourself out of our school lunch cafeterias. And they had a great big Twitter thing going on. Stay out of our schools, stay out of our lunches, leave us alone.
I
don't blame them either. And I'll tell you, one of the things is our young people are not stupid. Our young people have been raised in a society where they've got all these freedoms. And you start trying to take those freedoms away, the left thinks they've just got a hold of the minds of the youth. You just start taking it and messing with their rights and their freedoms, and you'll get a rebellion. You know, we remember what the young people did in the 60s.
Oh, yeah.
Although many of them were flower tree hugging kind of people, they stood up and said, we don't like this. And I remember, you know, Dan, in the 80s, in the late 80s, when we were leaving the Ronald Reagan years and going into the George Bush years, the young people in this country were pretty conservative. My age group were Reagan lovers, and we've just got, man, they've gotten a hold of our schools, and that's a huge problem. You know, we have Jennifer Cabaney of the College Fix on every Thursday night on Conover U. Give a shout out to Conover U. We've got a great show going on. I pretty much, you know, handed it over to Rodney to just do with whatever. I'm just the sidekick, and Rodney's got Jennifer Cabaney and his doctor, Dr. Brownstein, on each week. We give them each a segment, and they come on, and Jennifer Cabaney talks about what's going on in the colleges and the mentalities that they've got about sexuality. And it's really, really kind of sad that, you know, sexuality in the college age, they just kind of think it's just a play toy, and they don't understand. And we're going to see a lot of damage from that. But when it all really comes down to it, when they start losing their freedoms, when they start seeing the benefits of socialism, I believe they'll rebel. When they start getting to a point when these elementary, junior high, and high school and college-age kids, if they in another 10 years can't afford to buy cars and they can't afford to feed their kids and they start to really see the damages of socialism, I believe they're going to turn their backs real quick. That's one of the problems the left has always had in this great country, is when you've got a group of people that are used to freedom, they don't give it up too easy.
No.
I'm used to having my coffee.
Well, they're going to eventually, when they try to take all our freedoms away, they're going to have a cow. And the problem is by the time that happens, is we're going to lose some freedoms, like our Second Amendment, permanently. Because the government's not going to let us have guns back if they manage to take them away from us. And we have, because, see, these kids don't understand that, you know, one day you may have to use a gun to protect what you have. Not from an enemy, from the damn government. You know, and I don't want to see that day ever happen. But I damn well want to be prepared for it.
Isn't that the truth? And
yeah, go ahead.
You know, Dan, and as we look towards the future, one of the problems that I've got is I understand technology, and I understand the nature of man, and I understand the pattern. And the pattern's been the same since the beginning of man. The further you get away from God, the more things fall apart. And it always ends up in a situation where man has separated themselves in society so far from God that they end up in bondage of some kind. And then it's at that point where man always turns back to God. And it's where man always turns back. They learn their lesson, and then they go back. And I just hope we don't have to go down too far down that road. I hope that we have some future left of where we have that understanding. But if we don't, and I do know this, if we don't, we know where we end up. You know, we've got some issues that we haven't even covered today on the show with that technology is giving the government the ability to basically watch every move that we make. We had George Orwell's 1984. I remember when we were looking towards 1984.
you and I both. I'm right. 1984
now
is such a long way away. I mean,
exactly. But we've got the situation with technology, and we've handed it kind of over. You know, I spend off and on all day long on Facebook. I don't post a whole lot of personal stuff. It's mostly politics, but we see some of these things, and it really can be kind of scary as we look forward into our future. But I've got confidence in the great country that we are, and the people. The people always have the ability to stand up and do what's right. And, you know, although we've got some abuses in our judicial system, we got a lot of good sheriffs and deputies and police officers and excuse me, I got choked. Dying,
yeah, you're like,
Dan, I'm dying. we've got great first responders. You know, last night, Dan, I tell this little story because I want to give a huge shout out to the Mesquite Police Department. I take it that was the police department up there. We were all sitting here watching, doing whatever. I was watching TV on, I was watching Netflix, as I do often on my computer. The kids were watching TV, and my sister was sitting here playing on her iPad, and all of a sudden we heard the helicopter overhead. And it was going around and around, right over the top of us. You know, and I always get the idea, you know, the black helicopters have finally showed up to take me away. But,
I got that feeling
but,
a lot lately.
We heard this noise, and it was a loudspeaker. And what I thought, and what my neighbor next door thought the exact same thing, he thought the helicopter was overhead and that there was a cop car out front talking on his loudspeaker. It was that loud and that clear. So I went out the front door, and I didn't see any cop cars, and I looked up, and there's a helicopter going over our neighborhood. And all of a sudden, I heard the loudspeaker go on again and said, missing 11-year-old black female. Missing 11-year-old black female. If you have any information, please call the Mesquite Police Department. Now, the first thing that struck me, Dan, was the technology that allowed that loud helicopter that was probably, I don't know, a couple hundred feet up in the air to broadcast that so clearly over the noise of a helicopter. I mean, how do you do that? I stood within 20 foot of a helicopter. They're loud. And it was just clear. And my hearing's not the best. I could hear it and comprehend it. And it went around and around. And pretty soon, there was all the neighborhood was out standing out in front in the front yard. And our neighbor came out. And he thought the same thing. He thought there was a cop car out there talking on the loudspeaker. And we all kind of, you know, talked about it and about my niece's age. And so we figured, you know, somebody she went to school with. They were obviously swirling around our neighborhood in particular here within these four or five streets going right over the top of our house. It was kind of scary for a little while. And then pretty soon he kind of went away a little bit, and then he came back, and he started going around. Ladies and gentlemen, the 11-year-old girl has been found. And they kept announcing that and gave us some closure on it, which I thought was awesome. I was worried we were going to go to bed and not know the answer to this, but they went around. It was an amazing thing with technology that they were able to do that, get that out. I don't even want to think about one of my nieces being in that situation. We don't even let them out the front door. They don't get to go out and play out front like we used to. They play in the backyard. They're not allowed to go wandering the neighborhood. When I was in the first grade, I walked the equivalent sit-in-a all by myself down to the creek down here to go to my friend's house. Can you imagine us letting Natalia just go out the front door and just go walking down the street all by herself? The world has changed a little bit, but I can't imagine. But the technology and the ability and for the Mesquite Police Department to be on it like that and to be using such resources, I want to give them a big shout-out because that was a pretty incredible thing to witness as they did that and would just amazing, a gut-wrenching feeling for your kid to be missing. But we've got some great technologies, and some of them are being abused. We always see on YouTube, especially, there'll be a cop who'll show up at the front door and want to abuse our constitutional rights. I passed one around yesterday where the cops showed up. They were looking for a felon, and they wanted the guy's ID and this and that. And I said, listen, you don't have probable cause. You know, you're not coming into my house. I'm telling you right now, there's nobody in here. There's no felon in here. But you can't step across. And the cops backed down. The one cop started to get a little huffy. The other cop knew he was treading on thin water because the guy obviously knew his constitutional rights. And there, you know, there's a fine balance anymore, and there shouldn't be, but there's a fine balance between helping the authorities, helping them do their job and cooperating with them, and then just deciding they're going to step all over your constitutional rights. But, you know, it's always good to see when they're doing their job and they're doing it right. They put their lives on the line many, many times, and we want to give them a big, huge shout-out for that. Well, Dan, we're rounding out to probably the two of us have got one more time to go around and do our rants. We're sitting about 20 minutes out. You know, I want to give a few shout-outs. We've got some interesting things coming up, Dan, on Blog Talk Radio. And one is going to be on Conover U on the 25th. Now, that's not this next weekend. The next week, Rodney will be coming to Dallas again, get to see him. Not next week, but the week, and not the week after that, but the third Thursday from now, I do believe. Let's see. We got six, the 11th, the 18th, the 25th. We're going to have Kelly McMillan on. And if you remember, folks, one of the first Operation Choke Points, McMillan Firearms has been around for decades. In fact, during the Vietnam era, Kelly's dad invented, and I can't tell you what kind of gun it was, but they were having, the sharpshooters were having not the best of stats. And they came to him and said, we want you to help create a gun that gets us a little bit better opportunities. And he did, and created a gun. And there's been a couple of guns that our military has used on a large scale. Kelly's dad was responsible for and different things. McMillan Firearms here this last year ran into a situation where Operation Choke Point, which you've heard of, Dan, where the government is basically putting pressure on the banks to not give merchant services. And if, for those of you who don't know what merchant services are, the merchant services are when the bank gives you the ability to take a credit card. They're the merchant services are the ones that come out and they set up the little machine that you swipe. If you go to 7-Eleven, you swipe your card. They've got a company that operates that merchant service. service, and when they swipe the credit card, it goes into your bank account. They charge you a little bit for it. But the Operation Choke Point was set up, and the Department of Justice has been putting pressure on these banks to cut off these firearms dealers and different groups. And McMillan Firearm was one of the first that ended up in that mess. So what Kelly did was he went looking around for a Second Amendment, pro-Second Amendment group of merchant service, and got a deal working with them and opened up McMillan Merchant Services. And so we've got a situation where we've got, especially conservative businesses, have got to support this guy. Got to support it. And I'm going to be encouraging anybody, and Dan, you and I have already talked about this. You've got people down there that we can get to switch over their merchant services to McMillan Merchant Services. Because, man, we got to support our team. We got to really support our team. And I've been watching some videos and investigating, and not only are they pro-Second Amendment, very, very strong, and will protect your rights. They donate a lot to different firearms and different Second Amendment groups. And on top of that, they keep the prices as low as possible so that it's competitive as well. So we're going to have Kelly on Conover U. He's in Alaska right now, I think he said, hunting bears. And so it's going to be a couple of weeks before he can come on the show. But we're looking forward to that. But it's something, Dan, I think you and I need to maybe really investigate a little bit and cover next week this Operation Choke Point that the administration, another example of government overreach. They have no business telling a bank who they can, what businesses they can handle and what businesses they can't. It's kind of an insanity, but we're looking forward to that one on that. And then, Dan, another one, you and I next Tuesday with Jennifer Montrose are going to have the great Orlene Kohler. I'm going to have to ask her to remind me how to say her name. It's hard to say. You don't pronounce it the way it looks. But Orlene was actually responsible for us being in Texas. She was actually responsible for us having the American Sovereignty Radio Show in the first place. When I first found out about Common Core, I was listening to some Phyllis Schlafly stuff. I love Phyllis Schlafly, and I go and I listen to some of her stuff sometimes. And Orlene happened to be the guest, and she was talking about Common Core, and I had never heard of it. Active, and Romney knew about Common Core. That's what makes me angry about Romney. He could have used it. He could have won that election. He kept his mouth shut. But the first time I found out about Common Core, and I listened and went, I got to get a hold of this lady. I got to get her on a show. So I immediately emailed her, got a response back, and she came on at the time we were still doing Conservatives Coast to Coast on the Underground Hard Drive with Steve Williams and Bob Green and Michael Smith and John Grooms. And we had her on, and she talked about it. And it was within about 3 weeks that Jennifer and I decided to do parental sovereignty. And it wasn't too long after that, Dan, that you joined the show. I think within a couple of weeks you joined the show. And, of course, we've changed that to American sovereignty because we cover a lot of sovereignty issues. And then it was from those two interviews, though, the one with Phyllis Schlafly and the one that we did that woke my sister up to Common Core. My sister spent that next year talking to every parent she could about Common Core. And it was not too long after that she says, maybe it's time to move to Texas. And so Orlene really has literally changed my life. She got me on the bandwagon of Common Core. She got the Parental Sovereignty Radio Show started in the first place to combat Common Core. It's been quite the fight since then. And actually, she was basically responsible. If I hadn't heard that, we'd probably still sitting in California if we hadn't found out about Common Core as soon as we did. So looking forward to having her on that and having a show dedicated to Common Core again. We're looking forward to it. So we got those two major things looking forward to, Dan. It's going to be a lot of fun next Tuesday.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the more we educate on Common Core, the more people we can get rallying against it. And, you know, this is a bipartisan issue. neither side wants it because it takes away so much rights. Teachers, you know, even though they're mostly left, they're there first and foremost to teach, and they love to teach. And Common Core is taking that away from them. And teachers are going, you're not going to do that. And the problem is right now is the parents don't know. Because they're still basically trying to keep it hush-hush. And like they did with, what do they call it, the Sunshine Standards over here now. But I looked at it, it's the exact same thing. You know, our government's trying to bamboozle us. And as soon as this election's over, I'm going to start back up with spamming the governor and spamming my local reps until they've had so much of me they aren't going to want to hear from me. You know, I don't have any problems. I've already been blacklisted by Gus Bilirakis. mean, that's my congressman. He won't talk to me. You know, and it just goes to show you that if you don't agree and try to go along with the program, they want to bury you. They want to push you aside and ignore you like you aren't there, which means we just need more people on our side so we can push back. And there'll come a time when all of a sudden the choice is, do you want a job next election or do you want to start listening to your constituents? And that's where we have to get. We have to get to that point. We have to make them fear us and not us fearing them. Remember, this is a government of the people, by the people, for the people. And they are only our voice and nothing else. For we have the ability as American citizens to remove them from office. And please, everybody, don't forget that. Because it's us that has the power. It is the American citizen that has the power. And all this crap that's going on right now is because we let it happen. Now let's stop letting it happen and let's get off our rear ends and turn off the bloody TV. You know, we used, in my day, we called it the boob tube. Why? Because it made you boob out of everybody. It made you lazy. You know, when I got home from school, I couldn't go in and watch TV. I was sent out to play. You know, I had my work to do, you know, around the yard or whatever. And once I got everything done, then I could go out. And during the summer, you know, you got your chores done early, and then you went out, and you knew at noon you better be back home. Or you had to call your mom and run inside and use a rotary phone, and it'd take like one ringy-dingy, two ringy. You had to call. your parents. I mean, that was the way we lived. You know, every Sunday we all went to church, and after church you'd have a big old breakfast with the family, and you know that was family day. And then, you know, you all enjoyed each other, the entire family unit. You know, you know, I wouldn't give up how I grew up for all the tea in China. You could take your Nintendo and your Xbox and your Y box and your Z box or whatever they call it. I could care less about it. And you know something? When I was a little kid, I'd go out and I'd find a stick and there was my gun and we'd play combat, you know, and run around and then you get shot and you'd fall off a sand dune or something like that. Oh, you got me. And then roll down the hill.
Not those evil fake pretend toy guns.
Oh, yeah. Heck, pretend. We had these little things that was corks that shot corks. Man, those things hurt when you got hit by them. We had the real things. They were just smaller and they were deadly. I mean, our toys bit back. And we loved it. You know something? And the way we looked at it is the dumb ones were the ones that died. I mean, survival of the fittest.
Right.
And, you know, how did we learn? You screwed up and are hurt. And you say, I ain't going to do that again. It was the best lessons in the world. You know, it was our parents let us go out, and we had the ability to go out without having to worry about some pervert trying to grab us. You know, why do we have those perverts? Because we pushed God away. And, you know, before I never was much of a preacher. I didn't talk about my personal life. I didn't talk about, you know, my religious beliefs or anything. You look at my post today, hardly a post goes by when I'm not mentioning God. I'm on a crusade, and because I'm sick of this crap the way we're living now. I don't like it at all. So how do you change it? You start preaching. You know, and I do it by showing through history that, hey, people, we weren't the ones that made this up. But you know something? Now over the thousands of years that mankind has been on this earth, they learned as long as they believed in God, everything went fine. Once they stopped believing, everything went to you know what in a handbag. And that's what that's why we're where we are now. And we want, you know, you need morality. You need to be taught that. And that's what we, you know, that's what we need to return to. And we're seeing it change slowly but surely. But, you know, everybody, we're reaching a lot more people nowadays. And please, you know, take your children to school. I mean, take them to church. And introduce them to God. Read, you know, a passage or two a night before they go to bed. You know, when they're young. And encourage them to pick the Bible up and start reading it. Read it as a book, you know, just like a regular everyday book. It actually works out pretty well that way. Because it goes in a kind of like a chronological order. And it makes a heck of a lot more sense instead of just reading like John 29 or Romans 8 or whatever, because it leads up to it and it tells you the whole workings of it. It's like looking at an engine. If I hand you a gear, you're going to look at the gear going, yep, okay. But if I handed you a bunch of pieces and said, there's your engine, let's put it together, then all of a sudden now you know how an engine works. And same goes true with the Bible. Read it through. It's actually a good read. You know, because what it is a bunch of little books. And you read through one little book, and you go to the next little book, and you go to the next one, and you go, wow, cool, you know, oh, that's why. You gain so much from it, and it doesn't take a heck of a lot of effort. Heck, if you're too lazy to read it, they have it on CD. They'll read it for you. You know, start doing something like that. You're going to find out God's a pretty cool guy. You know, Jesus was a cool person. He got in trouble, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when he was 9 years old, remember? You know, went up and he was jabbering to the priest in the church. And his mother was like, where the heck were you? You get your butt back. So, I mean, you know, Jesus wasn't even immune to these things. And it's
well, exactly,
kind of,
Dan.
Yeah, go ahead. I mean.
Oh, I was just saying exactly. Well, and we are at about 5 minutes, and we want to give Red Skelton some time. And I'm glad you brought up that old Bible, because I'll tell you, you are so right. Hollywood can't even come close to the story in the Old Testament. And if you start in Genesis and read your way through the book of Esther, and for the most part you can just read it straight through. There's a few places where there's some genealogies that get you a little bit bogged down. And after you leave Exodus chapter 20, it gets a little bit confusing as you're reading the law. It's just the law. It's be like reading a legal document. But for the most part, that history is a fascinating history all the way through, and it's great. And we're doing that in Ladies Bible Class on Fridays. We just started Ezra. We're going through Ezra, Nehemiah, and Esther, and then we're going to start right back in Genesis and go straight through the whole thing all over again. Looking forward to that. We want to give a big shout-out to Pundit Press. Pundit Press carries our archives each week. They play them over and over again through their means there. And as well, we're excited. Dan Butcher, while we were doing the show, let me know that they've got it set up. We're starting tomorrow. They'll be broadcasting live as we are from Pundit Press. So we'd be wanting to share their link instead of just the regular Blog Talk link here on out. You're going to want to give a huge shout-out to Pundit Press. Go to PunditPress.com and PunditPressRadio.com. There's some great articles there by our one and only Dan Wilson, as well as many other articles. Great place to find some news, the current news of the day, as well as a lot of different blog talk shows and different radio shows. Our good friend Josh Berenstein is on there, and Jason Miller, and Willie Lawson is on there, and the conservative. Kenneth McClinton. I can't ever remember what he calls himself. I need to get the list out before I start going down through the list. But we want to give a big shout out to them and to Tea Party Communities. Our Tea Party Communities are broadcasting our shows as live as well on an occasion. We appreciate both of them. You can find the web addresses there on the Blog Talk page up there at the top on the banner for both Pundit Press and for Tea Party Communities. So we also want to give a shout out to Wednesday night, War by Women Radio, Kimberly Marin and Christy Waters, my two good friends. They're doing a great job with that show, talking about women's issues and from the perspective of very conservative, very Second Amendment right women. And let me tell you, it is quite a show. You want to go back and listen to the archives, they're there at Contending for Truth Radio, and then their show is on Wednesday night at 8 o'clock Texas time, 9 o'clock Florida time. And you guys will really, really enjoy those two shows, as well as all the others. Dan, you and I will be talking again this next Tuesday on American Sovereignty Radio with Jennifer Montrose. Always enjoy giving her a shout-out down there in Alabama, working her tail off. by a long shot. And we had a great show today. It's always a great show. I want to also thank Dan Butcher for joining you last week. I had a really, really busy weekend with my cousin here, and it was just a little bit easier for me to just let Dan run with you, the Dan and Dan show. And you guys had a great show. I went back and listened to it. You had a great conversation, and it was. I want to thank him for jumping in there for me and giving you a help. You can do the show all by yourself if you need it, but it's always fun, a lot more fun to have somebody to bounce back and forth with. So this has been Saturday Symposium with Dan Wilson. We look forward to talking to you each week as we do this on Saturday mornings. It's as soon as Dan and I wake up this morning, I think we both woke up just about enough time to make a phone call.
That was a rough night.
I know, but as always, and boy, it looked like we ran out of steam. The computer is saying that the stream has stopped. So nobody's listening to us, Dan. So you're hearing us in archive, though. And with that, we're going to let Red Skelton tell us again one more time about that Pledge of Allegiance and his teacher there in Indiana. Did you have a teacher in Indiana, Red?
I remember a teacher that I had. Now, I went through the seventh grade. I went to the seventh grade. I left home when I was 10 years old because I was hungry. And I used to, I work in the summer and I go to school in the winter. But I had this one teacher. It was the principal of the Harrison School in Vincennes, Indiana. To me, this was the greatest teacher, a real sage of my time, anyhow. He had such wisdom. And we were all reciting the Pledge of Allegiance one day. And he walked over, this little old teacher, Mr. Laswell was his name. Mr. Laswell, he says, he says, I've been listening to you boys and girls recite the Pledge of Allegiance all semester, and it seems as though it's becoming monotonous to you. If I may I recite it and try to explain to you the meaning of each word? I, me, an individual, a committee of one, pledge, dedicate all of my worldly goods to give without self-pity, allegiance, my love and my devotion, to the flag, our standard, O glory, a symbol of freedom, wherever she waves, there's respect, because your loyalty has given her a dignity that shouts, freedom is everybody's job. United. That means that we have all come together. States. Individual communities that have united into 48 great states. 48 individual communities with pride and dignity and purpose. All divided with imaginary boundaries, yet united to a common purpose, and that's love for country. And to the Republic, a state in which sovereign power is invested in representatives chosen by the people to govern. And government is the people, and it's from the people to the leaders, not from the leaders to the people. For which it stands. One nation, meaning so blessed by God, indivisible, incapable of being divided, with liberty, which is freedom, the right of power to live one's own life without threats, fear, or some sort of retaliation, and justice. The principle or qualities of dealing fairly with others. For all. Which means, boys and girls, it's as much your country as it is mine. And now, boys and girls, let me hear you recite the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible,
with liberty and justice for all. Since I was a small boy, two states have been added to our country, and two words have been added to the Pledge of Allegiance: under God. Wouldn't it be a pity if someone said that is a prayer, and that would be eliminated from schools too?